and feeling perfectly fine. Well, diarrhea every few days perfectly fine, but fine nonetheless. That warranted a trip to the ER, where I got 2 bags of fluids, some Zofran, and some Dilaudid, my feel-better cocktail. I was only there for a few hours, which means that either I was doing pretty well, or that my insurance was like, get that bitch out of there right goddamn now, or we ain't paying shit. There is no known cure for Crohn's. I just keep dutifully taking my pills and trying not to drink so much and trying even harder to stay away from fancy French cheeses. Right now, I'm not on steroids or rheumatoid arthritis strips, and I'm no longer on immunosuppressive drugs either. I haven't had to depend on special undergarments, see what I did there, in months. No rubber sheets, no scopes, no x-rays, no scans, no colonoscopies, nothing. And the only thing that has really changed in the last year, because, let's face it, I still get drunk and stress out sometimes, is that I haven't been messing around with any goddamn dudes. Celibacy cured my shit disease. Alert the New England Journal of Medicine. Seriously, man, it can't be a fucking coincidence. We already know that when I raised my fucking standards a while back, it all but dried up my romantical prospects. For reals. And I was a little salty about it at the time, yes, but what an amazing trade-off. Swapping raggedy, knuckle-dragging assholes for a clean bill of health for my own precious asshole? Yes, please. Every time I've saddled myself to some lie-faced, underperforming, whack piece of shit boyfriend, I've ended up in the hospital 2 or 3 or 10 times during the course of said relationship. I need to call my hot butt doctor and tell him why my camera endoscopy had unclear results. Because asshole son of a bitch obviously doesn't show up on an intestinal radiograph. This is a revolutionary medical breakthrough I'm making here, people. Think of all the money I could have saved, all those colonoscopies I could have avoided. The first time I had a barium series, I wanted to slice my wrists open on the goddamn table. If the doctor would have said, "Listen, bitch, you can avoid being subjected to another one of these if you just get rid of that human garbage texting some other broad out in the waiting room," I would have done so in a heartbeat. Who knew that not having to worry about the state of my pubic hair at any given moment would result in no longer shitting myself in public? I'd never talk to another person again if it meant I could stop spending half my paycheck on maintenance drugs for cereal. Besides, sex is boring and totally gross. And I'm obviously growing up, despite whatever reflection my ailing credit score might be of my adulthood. Because every time I think about banging, I just think gonorrhea, and about how I don't have it, and about how other people do, and about how easily I could catch it, especially now that there's a drug-resistant strain of that shit. Sex is stressful and ridden with disease, and people are soul-sucking opportunists just waiting to rob or betray you. So is it really that surprising that now that I don't have to worry about blemishing my otherwise perfect STD tests, that my stomach doesn't hurt all the fucking time? I'm just saying, constantly worrying about who a dude is calling when he takes his cell phone into my bathroom in the middle of the night equals shit-splosive, raging, stomach pain, diarrhea, butt disease. See also when he doesn't call me back, or sees me only once a month, or hits on my friends, or fucks wrong, or basically does any of the million things some asshole could do to make me want to hit him with my car. Meanwhile, only having to worry about what time Real Housewives of Atlanta is coming on equals I haven't been sick for a goddamn year. I finally have something to say to these jerks who keep asking why I ain't got no mans. Well, yes, nosy bitch I went to high school with. I most certainly would like to be married with 6 and a half children and a golden retriever right now. But, you see, it turns out that I have a physiological reaction to men and their insipid nonsense. Relationships give me baby guts. It's downright dreadful. I'm lucky to even be alive. So that's that. I'm not horrible and intolerable and physically unappealing. Men don't hate me and think I'm stupid. I'm just allergic to assholes. Man, I'm so relieved. And so is my asshole. The Terror of Love. I am missing the first bicuspid on the upper right side of my mouth. 8 years ago, I got a root canal. It was routine, I guess. How the shit can you know unless you have a skull x-ray machine in your living room? Anyway, I hadn't seen a dentist in fucking forever, because dental care is super expensive, and while teeth are easily the thing a person is most afraid to fucking lose, ain't nobody got hundreds of dollars just lying around for annual x-rays and cleanings. Besides, I was 25. Was I really expected to worry about my goddamn teeth? I am young and I'm going to live forever because Hot Pockets are totally nutritious. Okay, so I woke up one morning in the gigantic apartment I had stupidly rented at the insistence of my then boyfriend, who swore to God that he would come over and spend the night more if he didn't have to tiptoe around to avoid pissing off my roommate. He hadn't yet fulfilled this promise, but 4 months isn't really that long, is it? Gah, fuck that guy. And my mouth was hurting. Like, really hurting. Like, I walked past the fan in the kitchen window and almost collapsed in pain when a cool spring breeze hit the raw, exposed nerve, also known as my goddamn mouth. I called a dentist from the phone book, because 8 years ago, there was still such a thing as a fucking phone book. And she called a pharmacist, and 2 hours later, I was on the bus, clutching a bag filled with antibiotics and Tylenol 3, on my way home to take it easy and try not to eat anything sweet or cold. A couple of days after that, on my back, squinting into a blinding fluorescent light, while this very nice woman talked to me about her toddler in a soothing voice as she drilled an access hole into my infected tooth and removed all the pulp and rot and mildewing beef gristle. Last summer, I was eating my lunch alone in the darkened conference room at work, crying softly to myself in ecstasy at the deliciousness of the pulled pork wrap I had just purchased from Pret-a-Manger, when suddenly I felt something hard and jagged on my tongue. Undeterred by what I assumed were the lost fingernails of a careless fast food worker, I continued to eat that glorious sandwich, gulping down the gritty ends of some teenage sandwich maker's stray hairs with fervor. But then the tip of my tongue grazed a sharp stalactite of broken tooth protruding from my upper gum. I dropped my sandwich on the floor, I mourn to this very day, and covered my face while run-walking to the bathroom before anyone could see that I had obviously just tried to eat my own fucking face. I pulled up my lip to reveal the dentition of a feral street beast. Broken shards of mangled tooth and bone, littering a tongue that oozed fresh blood and bits of partially chewed, slow-roasted pork. My new dentist took an x-ray of my skull and informed me that the dark gray rain cloud I thought was a lazy hygienist resting her thumb on the machine was in fact a fist-sized clot of bacteria slowly eating its way through my upper jaw. After Googling what endodontist meant, I went and saw one, and immediately decided I was too fucking poor to afford $3,000 in root therapy, or whatever the shit is called, and I went back to the regular dentist and let him stand with one foot on my chest and the other braced against the chair while he blackened my right eye, trying to break what was left of my busted tooth loose from my skull. That is the worst sound I have ever heard. The crack and separation of bone from inside my own fucking head. Tears slid from my eyes involuntarily. I am convinced that this is what hell feels like, the soundtrack of a continuous loop of your head bones breaking in surround sound. I was sent home with a leaky maw packed with gauze stained pink by blood and mouth goo, instructed not to drink anything from a straw for several hours. I iced my face with a tub of pineapple sherbet and texted my friends to bring me soup while gingerly probing my face hole's tender new vacancy with the tip of my tongue. I'm sitting in Metropolis on Granville at a table in the back near the bathroom so that in case I have sudden onset diarrhea or drop my 3/4 full latte in my lap and the most desperate thief in the history of Earth needs to steal the netbook I'm borrowing from my boss and the approximately $3,875 worth of lip gloss I have on my person at all times, I can, ostensibly, hear him doing so and burst through the door with my pants around my ankles and waddle after him, dripping liquid waste along the way in a fruitless attempt to recover my belongings. I have a date. A real date with an actual human. A human who suggested this bustling coffee shop full of college kids and hipster mamas, and all I can think about is why I've chosen today, of all days, to wear my fake tooth. It's something the dentist called a flipper, a molded piece of plastic that looks like gum tissue with a little bit of tooth poking out. I get self-conscious about the hole, hyper-aware that when I am laughing really hard and my eyes are crinkled and my belly is shaking, that there is this missing piece of my mouth's puzzle. I am glad to be rid of it, for sure, because how lame would it be to drop dead from toxic blood brain poisoning, courtesy of a rotten tooth, in the 21st fucking century? But then I think about meeting this new person who doesn't know me and might not forgive that 6 months ago my face was a flesh wound, and I think, love is terrifying. The flipper makes me slur my words, badly. And it hurts. The parts that connect it to my upper jaw dig into my gum and it fucking kills. In the mirror, it seems totally obvious, almost distracting enough to make me forget the thieves plotting the theft of my $200 virus-riddled computer. The soy chai latte I'd ordered was already cold because the flipper didn't rest flush against my jaw, and I didn't trust that I could have a normal conversation while dribbling hippie tea from the corner of my mouth. He was scheduled to arrive in 3 minutes, and I was sweating in the bathroom, using both hands to try to pry this tiny piece of pink and white plastic loose from my head bone. I wear a maxi pad on dates because I am a crazy person, and adult human males scare the shit out of me, and I'm pretty sure I peed in it a little as a result of the force I was exerting on my poor fucking teeth. They'd already been through so much. I wiped my face with a cold paper towel and pulled my shit together enough to artfully arrange the smart person books and magazines I just happened to be carrying around in my bag. I squinted at my computer screen, at this very essay, wondering how he's going to feel when the book comes out and he realizes that all of this sweaty panic was because of him. We would laugh. Obviously, because that's 7 months from now, and we will already have exchanged house keys and I love yous by that point. He will have already seen the gross, dark line worn into my torso from years of hauling these tits up to my chin with the strength of an underwire. He will already know that I don't really read The New Yorker as much as I would like him to believe today. By that point, my missing tooth will just be a thing we chuckle about as I scrape together my royalties to pay for an implant. So that if this thing doesn't work, and inevitably it won't, I won't have to be terrified ever again. At least not about what my mouth looks like. But he never showed up, so I will never know. I can't tie a man's necktie. And I love, love, love that lovely and romantic visual. The adoring wife or girlfriend, face upturned to the glowing sun that is her man's. His body slightly damp and smelling of the shower, of deodorant, of aftershave. White-collared shirt undone at the neck as she playfully tugs at the bolt of brightly colored shiny fabric she had stood in the bedroom doorway watching him struggle with moments before, a smile playing at the corners of her mouth. Downstairs, there is breakfast made. Maybe not breakfast, because she has to work, too. And who has time for perfectly fried sunny-side-up eggs when there is a management meeting at 9:30? But the coffee is started, and the Bialys are defrosting on the counter, and the lox from Kaufman's is on the second refrigerator shelf, tucked next to the low-fat cream cheese she started buying when his cholesterol numbers came back elevated at his last physical. He showers first, always, because she likes to hit the snooze 3 or 4 times, clinging desperately to those precious extra minutes of sleep. She listens to him peeing. She listens to him humming as he lathers shaving cream across the sharp angle of his jaw, carefully and methodically dragging the razor across his cheeks and chin. His slacks and dress shoes have been laid across the overstuffed reclining chair he sometimes likes to watch The Daily Show in, after the bottle of wine, but before the 20 minutes of reasonably inspired lovemaking. When she hears him fumbling with his toothbrush, she takes that as her cue to hustle downstairs and put the coffee on. This is, like, my fantasy. My romantic fantasy. I don't sit around fucking daydreaming about a dude going down on me for 9 hours, barf, or about riding some massive titanium cock for days at a time. Gross. What gets me hot is all the other shit. Dreaming about someone whose allergies I need to remember when I'm at the grocery store. That's where the real romance is. Because I've had sex before. What a fucking snooze, my dude. Sex is so dumb and boring, and unless you're in really incredible shape, or you have a ridiculous imagination and are into some really freaky shit, what you do and what I do is limited to a handful of very similar things. Even your grandmother has been choked and spit on and handcuffed. Why don't we instead dream up some motherfuckers who will set up the automatic renewal on our magazine subscriptions? I've dated approximately one man who had to wear a tie every day to work. And once I spent the night at his apartment and, after bolting upright in horror because homeboy had space issues and didn't like for me to fall asleep in his bed after sex, I ran into his kitchen and splashed some water on my face and then tried to make some coffee. Except I'd never used a French press before, and I totally fucked the shit up. Coffee grounds every fucking where. And then I burned him in the shower because I flushed the toilet while he was directly under the stream after I'd snuck in to pee in the first place. I was watching MTV in the living room at an obnoxious volume as he called and called my name, asking if I could pack him a lunch because he was running late. I didn't fucking do it because I was too busy watching Usher videos and attempting to emulate his sweet dance moves. 10 minutes later, I was straining weak coffee through a sieve into a travel thermos and wrapping random leftovers in plastic wrap for his lunch. One bruised kiwi, a quarter of a dried out rotisserie chicken, a handful of cashews, most of a brownie, while he grumbled in the bedroom. A box of new dress socks? No, I hadn't seen it. The bag from the dry cleaner with his pale blue shirt in it? Nope, can't remember which closet I'd hung it in. I was virtually useless. But I'd practiced tying a Windsor knot with the help of some YouTube videos and my roommate Joseph's least favorite tie, and I was ready. I was ready to redeem myself in the eyes of my go-to fantasy. I was ready to be that woman who wrapped her hair in a towel so that she could apply her makeup and fetch her man's tweed jacket from the cedar closet without dripping leave-in conditioner all over his nice carpet. Because, of course, he owns this condo, and this carpeting was so expensive, and when I dropped that sloppy Joe in the hallway last weekend, he really did look like he was actually contemplating slitting my actual throat. And even though I was scared, I was ready. There was bitter, gritty coffee in a busted travel mug, and a crumpled plastic jewel bag on the counter containing the kind of lunch you wouldn't feed your worst enemy. And he isn't going to marry me, but goddammit, I was going to tie the shit out of that tie, even if it killed me. He was wearing cufflinks, and a heady cloud of aftershave hung over the room, and he smiled when I asked if I could help with his tie and handed it over. "Wide end on the right," I murmured to myself. "Cross the wide end over the narrow end. Or is it the narrow end over the wide? Then bring the wide end up through the loop between the collar and the tie. No, wait. Then bring the wide end back down?" I stepped back to survey my handiwork so far. My eyes widened in horror. "I'm just going to do this when I get to the office," he sighed, yanking loose the merit badge-worthy Boy Scout bowline knot I'd made from his necktie. He was so annoyed that he left his lunch on the counter. So I ate the brownie. And the kiwi. Okay, fine, I ate the whole fucking thing. Stress eating is a real thing. I'm not going to have a baby. Not a biological one, at least, and that is a big deal to a lot of people. No, I have not done exhaustive research, and I have not undergone extensive tests. I haven't harvested any eggs, or thought about in vitro fertilization, because the first time I had that up-the-nose-down-the-throat tube threaded up my nose and down my throat by a 12-year-old medical student whose hands were shaking like a leaf during a torrential downpour while he reassured me that I should remain calm, I decided that whatever evil was brewing in the pit of my belly was never going to ever have to compete with a baby. A burrito? Probably, if I could ever stop shitting. Two gametes that would become a zygote that would then become a human life form? Decidedly not. And that is a motherfucking deal breaker for a lot of these dudes. A few years ago, I was taking classes at community college because I hadn't quite yet given up all hope. There was a tall African dude with a deep, melodious voice in the class, and he was sexy. He carried a briefcase to community college people. Dude was obviously a winner. I spent the entire summer semester wondering when this asshole was going to ask me out on a goddamn date. Not kidding. 2.5 legit months making sure my hoodies were clean and my flip-flops weren't covered in street puke because I just knew that this dude was head over heels in love with me and was going to whisk me off to mid-level management associate degree paradise. The last day of class, I was in line turning in the final group project that only I had worked on, when he grabbed my hand and said, "Let's get a drink to celebrate the end of the term." And that was incredibly romantic, but my dumbass still had 3 more classes to sit through that afternoon. What the fuck? and I didn't want to miss my African history final fucking around in a bar with my African future. I aced my multiple choice final and met Frank at a bar near my apartment because I'm lazy and I just don't feel like trying very hard anymore. He got a beer, I got a shot, and we spent half an hour making fun of most of our classmates, all total goddamn idiots. He was funny and smart, and he wore polo shirts in earnest, and he even let me see what was inside his briefcase. Bundles of paperwork from his job as a manager at Hollywood Video. I love videos, I swooned, flagging down the bartender for another Jameson. He asked me about my job, it's the best, and my educational goals, none whatsoever. And then he asked if I wanted to have children. I felt the fear creeping up the back of my neck. Today? I asked, stalling. It's kind of late in the day, don't you think? Oh, ha ha ha. Frank explained to me that having several strapping young sons to carry on his bloodline was the thing he wanted in life more than anything else, and that adoption, or saving all that kid money to spend our golden years traveling abroad and trying not to die from a heart attack during sex, was totally out of the question. And then I explained to him that the only thing I planned on giving birth to in the near future was a roast beef sandwich with horseradish mayo, and that fostering 17 kids was pretty much the only reason I would ever want to get rich. We wouldn't even need a maid, see? I said, diagramming our adopted family on the back of a menu. If we space out the ages just right, neither of us would have to wash a single dish for, like, the next 30 years. It's fucking genius. Also, child army. He signaled for the check. Can I still get a discount on my membership? I asked as he politely handed the bartender his credit card. He rolled his eyes and nodded, digging a coupon out of his briefcase. I never did take that Steel Magnolias DVD back, because fuck him. I can't make pancakes. I feel like pancakes are these fundamental things that all good husband-snagging women are capable of making. What is a Sunday morning for if not the sizzle of hotcakes on the griddle and bacon in the pan? What is that age-old tradition of breakfast for dinner if it doesn't include a fluffy stack of buttermilk silver dollars? There are lots of things I can cook, and there are a handful of things I make exceptionally well. But I've lived alone for a really long fucking time. Long enough to be satisfied with a handful of microwaved Little Smokies and a gluten-free cupcake for dinner. I made a big, fancy dinner a couple of weeks ago, mushroom bourguignon, because I was going through a vegetarian cleanse thing, but don't worry, I'm over that brief bout of mental illness and eating so much sausage again. I spent an afternoon in my kitchen, slicing and washing baby portabellas, making a roux and boiling wine and beef broth to make gravy. And when it was all done, I got in bed and watched The Mindy Project on Hulu. There are all of these recipes that I make and sometimes eat, and I usually wish someone handsome was around to make sure they taste good, and someone who won't just eat the whole pot because he spent half his paycheck on fancy spices to make it. But what if he doesn't want Rogan Josh or roasted skate wing? What if dude just wants a homemade apple pie? I cannot properly fold a fitted sheet. My whites often turn out dishwater gray. I have no household tips or tricks that involve apple cider vinegar. I needed to change that humidifier filter 3 months ago. And while these aren't the things someone notices upon making your acquaintance, I'm way more scared of a dislocated button or a bee-stung appendage than I am a text that reads, "Where should we go for dinner?" That is the easy shit. The restaurant / the hot new bar / the spot with the best undiscovered rock band. I could write you a list of the best places to bat your eyelashes in a dimly lit room in the company of a dashing paramour. But if I needed to make an omelet for the hot naked body still wrapped in my sheets, I'd have no idea. This is why we need places that deliver breakfast, and why my next paycheck is going into my tooth implant savings fund. Sorry I shit on your dick. Dear new boyfriend, please buy decent toilet paper. Oh, I know. That Scott business is hella cheap. Plus, there are 1,000 sheets. It's such an amazing economical value. But it feels like coarse sandpaper on my butthole. Also, when I'm really trying to get my dirt star squeaky clean, that garbage disintegrates and leaves itchy crumbs that get caught in my ass hair. And I can't hang out at your place if I almost set my butthole on fire every time. And maybe you don't want me to hang out, which is cool, but don't you care even a little bit about your own little brown eye? Stop torturing it. Make your toilet life better. Spend the extra $2, you bastard. Don't be weird if I almost shit in your car. It will happen. Not the shitting, necessarily, but guaranteed, if you know me for more than an hour and a half, at some point during our acquaintance, I'm going to grip my middle in a panic and turn desperately to you, begging you to put your foot on the goddamn gas, because if you don't, you'll be cleaning diarrhea out of the porous fabric on your car seat. Oh, I'm kidding. I'll clean it. But you will have to stand there watching me, and that is almost equally humiliating. So drive fast, and always be on the lookout for places with public restrooms. I might miss half the movie, but that's okay. And you don't have to feel weird because I spent 3/4 of the Drake concert indisposed. Enjoy that shit, bro. I only want to hear the Resistance anyway. If I say, I can't eat that, let that be the goddamn end of it. No, I'm not on a diet. Yes, I should be, but that is a discussion to be had another day. My Crohn's usually flares from stress. And what a pain in the dick that is, because it means I can never just, say, avoid cheese and have that be the end of it. It's not that simple. Sometimes I can have meat, and sometimes that same meat makes my gut feel like it's eating itself from the inside. So if I'm having a bad day, and I turn my nose up at that plate of pork belly tacos, don't be salty. You know I want that shit. It's just that today is a bread and white rice day. So quit rubbing those carnitas all in my face. Unless it's part of some sex thing, in which case, by all means. Visit me in the fucking hospital. Guaranteed, it's harder for me than it is for you. Seriously, I promise you that it is. And I know it's not fun, but there's cable TV and all the apple juice and unsalted vegetable broth you can drink. Bring me some magazines, please, and an iPhone charger, and some pajama bottoms if you have time to swing by my crib. Walking around with my ass out is the fucking worst. I'm a really fun patient. Seriously, I get all the good drugs, and that makes me as sweet as a kitten. I promise I will be really happy to see you. Adjust sexually. This peripheral arthritis is a son of a bitch. So we're not doing that one position you saw in that porn you watched a couple of nights ago. My joints don't bend like that. This brace I have to wear on my left hand at night is uncomfortable. So please pretend you don't notice it if I happen to graze your taint with the edge of it. I swear it isn't intentional. If you stick your thumb in my asshole again, I am probably going to shit on your dick. So don't do that. My bowels are hella unpredictable. You have to order anal sex 2 days in advance, like Peking duck. Try not to thrust so hard that it feels like you're boring a hole through my diaphragm, because sometimes I can't tell when this is pleasure pain or emergency pain. Be careful with my left knee. My right ankle joint is sore today. Man, this acid reflux is really making me want to die. I know. Why did we even bother with trying to fuck anyway? This is why I'm exceptionally good at giving head. Next time, let's just do that. I might vomit on your balls, but that's not so bad. You can keep a shirt on. Love, Samantha. How to get your disgusting meat carcass ready for some new hot sex. 1. Buy a can of Barbasol. Chin whiskers are a real fucking thing, sister. I stopped taking birth control a year ago because every time I turned the goddamn television on, there was another ad reminding me that my old ass was going to have a heart attack or develop a blood clot. And, frankly, I don't have enough sex to warrant taking that kind of risk. And I'm the kind of asshole who would ignore the throbbing pain traveling up my leg as a clot slowly migrated upward to explode in my lungs because I was too busy Instagramming pictures of my stupid dinner. I have an amazing relationship with my gynecologist due to the winning combination of my childlike need to be shocking and provocative and his infinite patience with a petulant toddler who is constantly barraging him with dumbass questions. 2 years ago, after he finished scraping barnacles off the sides of my underused cervix, he sat me down in the serious chair and asked if I had any concerns about my vagina health. That probably would have been a good time to confess that my irregular periods and occasional spotting hadn't cleared up. Or I could have mentioned that the metronidazole suppositories he regularly prescribed made my meat hole smell like chemicals and bacon, but I did not. Instead, I said, I'm thinking about having sex with a woman. If I have a hangnail and she's on her period, can my fingers get HIV? So I was joking because I paid attention in high school health class and I'm not a total fucking idiot. But he looked at me soberly and proceeded to give me a detailed explanation of the ways blood-borne diseases can be transmitted, complete with a demonstration of how to properly outfit one's hand in a snug rubber glove prior to engaging in a hearty round of finger-banging. I took notes on the back of one of those freeze your eggs pamphlets and made a mental note to never fuck around with this dude ever again. He didn't have time for my bullshit. But I just couldn't resist. So I said, what if I have a cut on my gums and I'll let you figure out which lecture I got next? Last year, on my 32nd birthday, I sat at the end of the exam table, each of my naked breasts balanced heavily in either of the doctor's hands, and I said, listen, let's stop pretending I'm ever going to have sex again before I go through early menopause. Can I stop taking birth control or what? He gave me the what the fuck do I care face and started talking to me about IUDs, and I was like, nah, son. How bad would it be if I just didn't ingest or insert a goddamn thing? Those commercials are downright terrifying, and I dance too hard to worry about an IUD shaking loose. That is not a real thing that can happen because science. Then he did the breast exam, which makes me so uncomfortable I start to sweat every single time, and shamed me for not performing my own at home. The last time I'd done one, lying on my back with my shirt off and my arms slung over my head just like the diagram I found on the internet showed me, I was pressing and pressing and pressing my boobs in a circular motion until I happened upon a hard little knot in my armpit. I made an appointment right away, convinced that I had found some stage 4 malignancy that was obviously leaching into my lymph nodes and vital organs as the clock in the waiting room ticked backward, taunting me. After spending an eternity wedged into a tiny chair, pretending to be interested in people, while my life was slipping through my fingers, sob, I was led back to a familiar exam room and ripped my shirt off to show the incredulous nurse my pulsating death boil of doom. She squinted and poked at the nodule before excusing herself to get the doctor. I started thinking about how best to update my Facebook with the tragic news. Should I be funny? Plead for sympathy? How does one make a cancer status update? Chemo would be brutal, but I would handle it with grace, of course. I've always been incredibly fond of headscarves. The doctor let himself in without knocking and peered at my underarm. Then he poked the bump a couple of times and rolled his eyes at me. He squeezed it, and a little dribble of rotten cheese oozed out onto his finger. Ingrown hair, he diagnosed. So what? No radiation? I asked. Warm compress, keep it clean, get out of my office. And that was the end of my medical career. That thoughtless jerk didn't warn me that my goddamn chin was going to turn into the back of a porcupine, though. Is this the shit that synthetic estrogen was saving me from? Waking up to a motherfucking 5 o'clock shadow? 2 months off the pill, and I started to wonder whether a possible death clot was worth it. Are you baby birds too young to have plucked your bristly neck folds yet? Well, let me tell you what that feels like. Absolutely horrible. Every morning I take that fancy tweezerman Elle Magazine encouraged me to buy and, instead of using it as intended, to artfully sculpt a supermodel eyebrow out of the coarse, unruly hair sprouting just below my hairline, I jut my lower jaw out as close to the vanity mirror as I can get it and grunt while yanking resistant hairs out of my fucking face. What cruel torment this aging is. Good thing I found a way to beat it. Okay, no, I haven't. I can literally step on my own nipples. But I've discovered that if you, one, buy Barbasol instead of those fruity lady foams, and two, buy disposable men's razors, you will feel much less like a dumb asshole when trying to get rid of your little granny beard every morning in the shower. They cost less, work more effectively, and won't leave proof of your grossness all over your nicked-up turkey waddle. Will you feel like a dude? Probably. But will your legs be hella smooth for a fraction of the cost? Definitely. And believe me, I like all those cocoa butter strips and shit, too. But the first time I had to explain the long red scratch on my jaw to my boss was the last. What a beast. 2. Should I wax my fucking asshole? How bad do you guys let it get between sexcapades? We're all friends here, right? So be honest. How far do you let yourself go? Okay, I'll go first. The minute I get dumped, well, after I make the voodoo doll from all the bits of hair I pulled out of the drain and scraps of fabric I've inconspicuously cut from all his shirts, I basically go through my bathroom with a garbage bag and throw out all the torture tools I used on myself throughout this most recent courtship. Out go all the pink bottled depilatories and at-home wax kits and smelly under-eye creams so that I can swap in their less sexy counterparts that were hidden in the back of the hall closet every time dude spent the night at my crib. The utilitarian bottles of dandruff shampoo and dirt-scented body washes from Whole Foods. This is not to say that I don't care about myself when I'm not seeing someone, because I totally do. I only buy myself the fanciest artisanal cheeses and the most expensive organic lip glosses my hourly wages can afford. I never buy clothes that have been worn by anyone else. I always take cabs, even if the distance traveled is ridiculously short, and I only purchase name brand items, especially when the brand totally doesn't matter. Ziploc bags, Bounty paper towels, Tide laundry detergent. You get it. I'm good to me. And, thankfully, I have the lowest possible standards when it comes to acceptable maintenance of this feeble pre-corpse. The only hair that grosses me out is the hair on my forearms, and that's just because I paid $1 billion for these shitty biker tattoos, and I will be damned if your view of them is going to be obscured by wanton tufts of gorilla fur. I don't even mind that coarse toe hair until summer comes around, and that's because I'm a disgusting hippie who refuses to keep closed-toe shoes on her feet if the temperature rises even 1 degree above 50. Not that I shave all that much to begin with. Bohemian is still a thing a smelly, dirty person can reasonably claim to be, yes? But when I suspect someone is going to see my stubbled flesh in a dimly lit bedroom, I do have the decency to run the epilady over my meaty calves and use exfoliating salt scrub on the chicken skin that covers my elbows. And on special occasions, I pull out the beard trimmer. The woman at Sally Beauty had eyed me skeptically as I pretended to read the labels on the industrial-sized bottles of hair relaxer and crystal gel. After a horrific experience with a bikini waxer, blood, sweat, tears, shit on the table, I vowed to never again expose my tender booty cheese to a bitch armed with a bag of fabric strips and a vat of bubbling hot wax. But I was about to have a third date with a hot dude who would not shut the fuck up about how much he absolutely loves eating pussy. Oh, boring. I mean, I don't really love being eaten out. As a matter of fact, I'm downright ambivalent about lying on my back for half an hour, trying to clench my butthole shut and concentrate on my happy place, while homeboy fruitlessly gnashes his teeth against all my healthy bacteria. Despite my disdain, I let them do it anyway, because feminism. And the very least I can do to be of assistance, other than not eating a ton of beans and raw spinach for a couple of days prior, is take a whacker to my lady weeds. But that Brazilian shit is for suckers. My sister asked why I didn't just trim it myself. Like, with scissors? I asked, shuddering at the mental image of me balanced precariously with one foot on the edge of the tub while attacking my labia majora with a pair of pinking shears. No, stupid, she replied, incredulous, with a pair of clippers. Clippers with a fucking safety guard, so you don't shred your labia into 100 pieces. This, of course, had never before occurred to me. And so off I went to the beauty supply store. A prolonged, sheepish game of cat and mouse ensued, during which I pretended that I was buying a beard trimmer for my hirsute imaginary boyfriend. Is this the kind of thing he can use in his nose? While she rolled her eyes and reluctantly played along. The first time I used it, I was so terrified of either electrocuting myself or hacking my vulva into a million little pieces that I dialed 911 on my cell phone and set it on the edge of the sink within easy reach in case I needed to press the call button. I am more confident now, but I still am too shy and uneasy to use a mirror, so, from what I can feel, blindly groping around in my dry, empty bathtub, I still end up with a pubic lawn that looks like a child mowed it. In the dark. The hair doesn't really bother me all that much, but one time this dude told me that fucking a full bush is like sticking his dick into a Brillo pad. And then I sat there, in his bed, and watched him pantomime what fucking a Brillo pad would feel like. It is an image that has stuck with me, my coarse lady hair sloughing the skin off some unsuspecting penis. So now, if I like a dude, I show him by scorching my earth so I don't shred his dick like cheese in a box grater. Picture that in real life. It's hilarious. 3. Manny versus Petty. You may have one or the other, sir, but not both. Both escalates the game to a level that no man can reasonably be expected to achieve, especially if it's winter and I have to struggle out of my snow boots and hike up the stiff legs of my salt-encrusted jeans just to get the shit done. The first time I got my toes sucked, it was a goddamn revelation. I didn't know that it was something I even wanted until it was happening. Until Daniel was at the foot of his bed, dressed only in his stylish black boxer briefs, cupping my heel in his hand while gently biting my baby toe between his teeth. My first thought, this is weird. Second thought, I've been wearing flip-flops all day, in the rain. There is homeless person urine on the sole of that disgusting foot. He moved from one toe to the next, lips, tongue, teeth, the whole thing. And even though I'd blurted, "You're going to catch the flu," as he kissed the chipped red polish on my big toe, his determination remained unwavering. Daniel is one of these dudes who, like, worships every stretch mark and makes sweet, incandescent love to each and every misshapen precancerous mole. The first time we had sex, I was on my period. And not day 7, a few spots here and there period, but day 3, heavy flow, bleeding like a stuck pig period. What a fucking soldier. So when he went for my foot, I wasn't surprised. He was the first dude who had ever asked me to slip my finger in his asshole to locate his prostate. The first dude who put his tongue in inappropriate places. The first dude who seemed happy to get up from a roll in the hay that left him looking like he'd just survived a car crash. I still don't know what he got out of it. Maybe there's some erogenous zone on the tongue that responds well to the rough, calloused skin on the side of my big toe. But I didn't even care. It feels good, like walking barefoot in squishy wet sand with warm water lapping at your toes. I had never before paid much attention to my feet, other than the occasional salt scrub at the end of a hot shower. I couldn't just ask one of my asshole friends what the proper protocol was prior to performing a tonsil exam with my phalanges. So instead, I made an appointment to have a pedicure, because I'd watched enough episodes of Sex and the City that it seemed like the right thing to do. And I know it's not a big deal, and it's not a rite of passage, and that something that costs $22 should not be the cause of such internal hand-wringing. But I'm uncomfortable having someone sit below me, digging street detritus from my nail beds, while I flip through Kirstie Alley's before and after pictures in People. Especially when I can awkwardly cut my own jagged toenails over the toilet without fear of hushed-tone nail technician reprisal. But I did it. I suffered through dozens of squirmy, restless pedicures so that this fine young gentleman could insert a perfectly square, cherry red toenail into his mouth at regular intervals. I hate those weird, slippery chairs. I hate trying to balance my heel on the footrest while the opposite knee is dangerously close to dislocating my bottom jaw. I hate choosing from 47 identical shades of red polish on the wall. Those chairs make my stomach hurt, and then I feel like I have to shit. And then I start sweating because I feel like I have to shit. And then I have to try not to slip and risk either breaking my ankle or kicking this bitch in the chin, all while clenching my unwaxed asshole, because 20-plus minutes with my knees pressed to my chest means, oh my God, I have to shit. Have you ever tried to mask the sound of stress diarrhea in a tiny nail shop bathroom? Surrounded by the prying eyes of 100 little Buddha statues and clusters of dusty silk flowers? My deepest sympathies to you if you have. That hand soap is always so fucking drying. Which is hella noticeable, considering that my hands feel like they've been tenderized and run through a dishwasher cycle. I bleed every time. Every single motherfucking time. They start pushing skin back and snipping at my cuticles, and inevitably, without fucking fail, I start leaking blood down my hands. Then comes the obligatory lecture about how it's my fault because I don't moisturize enough, lest I balk at shelling out $12 for butchered hands. But even if I rubbed Crisco into these softball mitts every night before bed, that wouldn't counteract being hacked to bits by a woman who is actively gossiping in her native tongue, picking deviled ham from under my fingernails, and watching daytime television at the same time. It's the reason I keep Band-Aids in my purse. And that, in a nutshell, is why you can either get 10 perfectly shaved down little piggies, or you can get 2 paraffin-dipped meat hooks dripping a bloody cuticle trail in my wake. But no, sir, you cannot, you will not, get them both. 4. Lingerie is gross. I love a hot bra. There's nothing on earth sexier than a hot goddamn bra. And I have good-sized tits, so buying hot bras is totally rewarding, provided that I don't have to wear a padded, plunging sweetheart during the workday, or run from a burglar in a lacy French-cut demi. Because I would knock out my own front teeth. My real life, riding the train, shoveling shit for 12 hours a day bras, are essentially made of black box material. They're sexy, I guess, especially when they're packed full of breast meat, but no one wants to undo 3 unforgiving layers of heavy corsetry, only to then be faced with 5 menacing hooks and harness-like straps. I buy these towering feats of construction, cassique, smooth satin, full-coverage bras, for no less than $3,712 a piece, and they are worth every penny. I'm not going to run a marathon in one or anything, but they keep my nipples from getting caught in my waistband, and for that, I would give up everything. But nobody wants to fuck someone wearing his mama's house bra, even if it's hot pink. So when I think a date is going to end in some second base action, I prep by unearthing my frilly little things, wash them by hand in woolite, then dry them in the salad spinner. Can you even comprehend the work that goes into all this? And it doesn't even guarantee